8. Hennessy couldn't really fathom what it was like to be bad at art. There was evidence that she had been, of course. Somewhere in the closets of her father's Pennsylvania suburban home were journals full of her early drawings. Languishing in some English rubbish heap were grotty canvases she had painted over again and again. The old art was wrong in all the ways non-artists tended to notice. Mismatched eyes, physically impossible nostrils, incorrect roof lines, broccoli-shaped trees, dog-nosed cows, and it was also wrong in all the ways artists noticed. Poor use of value, inattention to edges, uneven line weight, lazy composition, muddy colors, sloppy palette choice, impatient layers, derivative stylization, tentative brushwork, overuse of medium, underuse of planning, unintentional fugliness. Even her art-making process had been bad. She remembered what it was like to not be sure if a drawing was going to turn out. She'd sit down with a clothing catalog or a photograph of a model pulled up on her father's laptop. Then she'd sharpen her pencil and think, "I hope this works." She'd fuss over the likeness for hours. Hours! She couldn't even imagine now how she'd been spending all that time. What took her so long on a casual pencil sketch? She remembered agonizing over the eye placement, over the puzzling shape at the corner of a mouth, the absolute purgatory that was a woman's chin. But she didn't remember why such things had been confusing. Her head knew what it wanted to do. Why did her hand disobey? Noses veered petulantly. Rib cages went barrel-shaped, feet and hands turned into a four-piece mismatched tool set. She remembered actually howling in frustration as she wadded up an attempt, stabbing canvases with scissors, hurling paint tubes across J.H. Hennessy's studio. She remembered how, when she did turn up with a good result, she'd returned to it several times over the course of the day, taking it out again and again to flush with pleasure and surprise and accomplishment. She had no idea why it had gone well, and so she couldn't be sure it would ever happen again. Hennessy remembered this, but she didn't feel it. Somehow, all the pain hadn't managed to carry through the years. No part of her expected to fail when she sat down at a canvas now. She knew how the paint would behave. She knew what her brushes were capable of. No part of her doubted that whatever she was looking at would travel through her eyes, down her arms, and out onto the blank space before her. Once, one of her clients had asked her if she considered herself a prodigy. They'd been standing in front of a cassette she'd forged for him. "No," Hennessy had said, "I'm a forgery of a prodigy." But she knew she was good. No amount of thinking about how bad she used to be would change that. She might suck at everything else about being a human and a dreamer, but as an art forger, she might not be the best, but she was at least one of the best. That accomplishment seemed pointless now. There was no one to show it to who mattered. They were all dead. All except for Jordan, who had always mattered the most anyway. But where was she now?
"I am so fucking good at this," Ronan said. The two of them were in one of those electronic boutiques that took itself very seriously. Indirect neon lighting, backlit products, every shelf rounded and modern, phones of every shape and size lying the shelves and tables. There were traditional cell phones, wall-mounted hard lines, phones shaped like piggy banks, and phones shaped like fake teeth, phones shaped like model cars, and phones shaped like ceramic birds, phones like dish soap bubbles, and phones like bank pens with fake flowers affixed to the end of them. Many of them were impossible, but it didn't matter, because it was a dream, Ronan's dream, and he could do what he wanted. Hennessy said, "You could dream anything, anywhere, and you bring us to a consumer playground with the logos only barely scrubbed off?" Jealous much? Ronan was all snotty arrogance again, as if he wouldn't have drowned in nightwash if Bride hadn't brought them to another ley line in the nick of time. She wasn't jealous. She was wary. Ley line energy boomed through the dream. She hadn't felt this much lay power since she'd been in Ronan's dreamt forest Lindenmere. It made the dream as lucid as any waking experience. If she had her lace dream with this much power at her disposal. "We're not doing the lace dream," Ronan said. "Chill out. What do we want out of these phones? They've got to be untraceable, I guess. Portable. What else does a phone do?" Why didn't Adam text me back?
Because they were sharing the dream space, she heard his thought like a shout. It traveled through the dream with a retinue of amorphous sub-thoughts. Was Adam injured? Was he bored with Ronan? Did he prefer the company of his urbane new friends? "Calm down, Ronan. Stop being needy, Ronan. Get yourself together, Ronan. You're always the car crash, Ronan." It would have been polite to pretend she hadn't heard any of it, but Ronan and Hennessy had never been polite to each other, and she didn't see the point in starting now. "What's your boy like?" Ronan picked up a slender phone the size of a business card and made a big show of examining it for suitability. He didn't reply. "So he's ugly," Hennessy said, "or a complete cock-up." Ronan studied another phone that looked like an umbrella. "What do you think he's like?"
"I honestly have no idea," Hennessy said. "Who would be attracted to you as a love match? Has he got crushingly low self-esteem? Is he one of those soft boys who hide in the firm pecks of their scary partners? Is he a witch? Did he say a spell wrong and you appeared and now you're bound for life?"
"Yeah," Ronan said, "that one." Hennessy leaned over one of the shelves. The tediously normal-looking cell phone on it brightened to display a photograph of two young men as the lock screen. One was Ronan, laughing explosively. The other was a rather self-contained-looking fellow, striking in an unusual sort of way, smirking a bit at whatever he'd just said. They were not exactly opposites, but their appearances nonetheless gave the impression they were. Ronan's dark, dramatic eyebrows, the other guy's light, barely visible ones. Ronan's emotions screamed upon his face, while the other guy's whispered, "Is that him?" Ronan addressed the dream at large.
"Traitor, you didn't have to show her."
"He doesn't look like he's filling a hole inside himself with your toxic presence," Hennessy said. She kind of hated looking at them together. It made her feel ugly inside. "Are you guys in love five ever, or do you think you're a pretty bored game to pass his time?" Now she sounded ugly too. But Ronan just picked up another phone and after a space mused, "Your phone can be simpler than mine, of course. You'll only need to be able to call Jordan, right? There's no one else?"
A single question, clear and factual. What a weapon. And he delivered it in the same tone he might have said anything else, so she didn't notice the blade of its meaning until it was stuck inside her. Suddenly, Hennessy had a very clear understanding that the cruel exterior Ronan Lynch wore was not all posture. Every lock screen in the shop briefly showed Hennessy's face, but it was not truly Hennessy. It was Trinity, June, Brooklyn, Maddox, Jay, Alba, Octavia, Farah, Jordan. All dead. Almost all dead. It would have been easier in some ways if Jordan were dead, too. Simpler, anyway. Ronan said nothing else. He just let the silence do its violent work. She found she was both awed and grateful for this bit of nastiness in response to hers. Did you want to drink my arterial blood after that slash, or just roll around in it? Whatever, Ronan said, but it was clear they had come to an accord. He picked up a matte black phone. It was the size of an acorn, and when he clipped it onto his earlobe, it looked just like a tunnel piercing, making him look even more like a hulking goth than he had before. She could feel him thinking, small, subtle. It'll only place and take calls, not text, but that's fine. Fuck texting. I don't care about texting. I don't need to text ever again. Even in his own head, he lied to himself. Ronan said suddenly, "Can you imagine if all dreams were like this? It's so easy." "Okay, bride," Hennessy said mockingly. "You really don't see the appeal?" "Of shopping for electronics in your head." He studied her, eyebrows knit. He was trying to understand her, and maybe he could understand part of her, the part of her that was a lot like him. But he'd been good at this for too long. She'd been bad at it for too long. They were beginning to be shaped like it. The space between those two truths was vast and checkered with lace. "Hold my beer," Ronan said. The electronics store melted away. They were in a blistering red desert. Before them were two motorcycles in liquid black, their wasp-wasted bodies glistening with a permanent wet sheen. The compound eyes of their headlights pointed down a narrow straight road. It was both darkly inviting and subtly wrong. Hennessy glanced at him. "Is that what you think the desert looks like? Have you ever been? That looks like an alien planet. If you think you can do better, let's see it." It was a challenge, just like Bride. Change the dream. It had taken Ronan no effort at all. Closing her eyes, Hennessy remembered the last time she had been through a real desert. "Don't think about the lace." She could not make her mind put herself in a desert, so she imagined how she would paint it on a canvas. And in that moment, she felt the dream help her. Creativity prickled through her like a burst of adrenaline. Everything suddenly seemed easier to hold in her head all at once. Hennessy opened her eyes. The desert had changed. This desert wasn't red at all. It was white and pink and cream and striated with orange and black and yellow. The sand was knotted and complicated with crisp sagebrush dried by current heat and flat cactus swollen with past luck. The two dreamers stood in a valley. Mesas rose in the distance, pale underwater castles shaped by a sea that had long abandoned this world. The sky overhead was bluer than any sky in the world. This was a real desert, but a real desert by way of Hennessy. Exaggerated, heightened, made more itself, made art. "Fuck," Ronan breathed, and he didn't bother to hide his awe. Maybe, Hennessy thought, there was a world where she could be good at this. The lace was nowhere. And then they were on the bikes, and they were tearing through that painted desert. Ronan conjured a flock of white birds that skimmed fast and low beside them. Hennessy painted a fork in the road, the asphalt smearing out like a brushstroke. Ronan whirled music beneath their tires, pounding bass through the desert. Hennessy transformed the scene from day to night. The purpled sky riches berries, the sand pink and blue. Ronan cast both bikes into the air. Fear-free exhilaration, the only destination up. Hennessy could feel the ascent in every part of her body, the gravity weighting her stomach, the breeze against her arms, the sense of endless space above and below. Up, up, up. Hennessy let out a scream just to hear herself howl as they flowed up through the darkening night. Then suddenly, they broke through a cloud she hadn't even realized they'd been passing through. Up here, the air was thin and cold and wonderful. Everything tinged the furious raspberry red of a nearly gone sunset. Ronan looked worlds away from the version of himself she'd seen only hours before in the fast food restaurant. There he had been defeated, guilty, both victim of circumstance and architect of said circumstance. Here he was powerful, confident, joyful. A cheerful king. Hennessy versus Jordan. But maybe not. Maybe, Hennessy thought again, there was a world where she was good at this. The two dreamers coasted up there in the incredible sky for however long time lasted in dreams, sucking in big, pure breaths of air, feeling the ley line swirl around them and through them. Then Ronan said, "We gotta wake up. Keeping the lace out of here is giving me a headache." His words took a few seconds to land. When they did, they cut deep. Deeper than his intentionally cruel question had before, although she was sure he hadn't intended it this time. Hennessy said, "So you've been patronizing me this whole time, is that it?"
"What?"
"This whole time, you've been letting me think we're, what, equals?" The desert was shredding around them. The bikes were gone. Ronan peered around, bemused. "Are you pissed?"
"You let me think I was doing this. You were doing it. This is your desert." But he couldn't disguise his wince.
"God damn, it's strong."
"Right, sure. You babysat me. I just took some of the weight and didn't tell me."
Ronan's expression was puzzled as the checkered shape of the lace cast itself across his face. "You know this is what you always do."
"Yeah, she did, except she thought she was getting better. Learning, finally."
The sky was pulsing, and with each dark pulse, the shadow of the lace was printed across it. It was the lace dream. It was always the lace dream. It was always going to be the lace dream. Ronan pressed a hand to his temple. "I can't